For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm John Henry Smith. A federal bankruptcy judge has approved an $8.3 billion settlement between Stanford's Purdue Pharma and the United States Department of Justice. The OxyContin manufacturer will also plead guilty to three felony counts of criminal wrongdoing, and they'll also reorganize into a public benefit corporation, which will funnel profits from future opioid sales to opioid addiction programs. Connecticut Attorney General William Tong has been one of the more dogged pursuers of justice in this case. He joins me now. Your reaction to the settlement, sir?
I strongly object to this settlement and have since we first heard about it. You know, the bottom line is that the states have been fighting this battle against the addiction crisis and the opioid crisis, and we have been all over Purdue Pharma from the beginning, and so have victims and their families. And we are best equipped to provide resources for treatment and prevention. You know, we're the boots on the ground, and we know where people need help in Connecticut and across our state and across the country. We know where the most effective treatment and prevention programs are. And frankly, those resources should be deployed directly to the states, not to the federal government. I don't know what the federal government is going to use that money for and how it's going to use it. And to jump ahead of the states in this way just doesn't make any sense to me.
So, you know, I've seen estimates that Purdue Pharma made about $35 billion on OxyContin over a 25-year period. Now, is your biggest problem with the fact that $8.3 billion is a mere fraction of that? Or is your biggest problem, I think you just referenced the states, is your biggest problem with the settlement this creation of this public benefit corporation?
Yeah, it's both. And frankly, I've rejected other settlement offers before, and those settlement offers included billions of dollars. And it could have included billions of dollars from the Sackler family itself, but it wasn't enough because of the damage that they have done. Because the Purdue Pharma and the Sackler family are uniquely and singularly responsible for the opioid crisis through OxyContin and their abusive marketing practices. And so what I said in rejecting those settlements, those proposals, is that a bad deal is so much worse than no deal, because at the end of the day, it's my job not just to recover money for treatment and prevention and victims, but also to seek justice and to make sure that they pay a real penalty for their misconduct. I don't think this accomplishes that.
Well, you know, the Sackler family, it's divesting itself from Purdue Pharma, and they've agreed to pay $225 million while, of course, admitting no wrongdoing and facing no criminal charges. Is that it for them? So in your view, is the Sackler family off the hook in some way?
They could be, and that's totally unacceptable to me. And frankly, a particularly unjust result here, that a family that has gained billions upon billions of dollars from the opioid business, from the sale of OxyContin, off the backs of victims and their families, and the more than 1,000 people that die every year here in Connecticut, the more than $10 billion a year in damage to the state of Connecticut, to say that they're only going to pay $225 million with no guarantee that there'll be any criminal sanctions or jail time for them is a miscarriage of justice, in my view.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons you incorporate a business when you go into business, I was taught in school, was to insulate yourself from personal liability in situations where you are, where the operation is being sued. So given the fact that Purdue Pharma is the entity officially which did all of these things, even though it was the Sackler family through Purdue Pharma, what mechanism do you have to go after the personal monies of people running an incorporated business?
Those protections are not absolute. And individuals that engage in this kind of misconduct personally can be liable for their misconduct, whether it occurs, you know, in their personal everyday life or in their running of a business. So that doesn't deter me at all. And we have no hesitation in pursuing the Sacklers and the responsible managers and executives. Sorry, that's my dog there. Responsible managers and executives for their misconduct.
The fact that your dog barked, I mean, indicative of the dogged fight you have put up. You and you just, well, go ahead.
Thank you, John. Like so many people, I've got to do really serious and important work while trying to find a quiet place in my home as we all try to stay safe and healthy.
We all feel your pain on that in that regard. We all understand. You just mentioned that you used the term we just now in talking about this fight. In particular, you and New York Attorney General Letitia James have very publicly vowed to fight on despite this settlement. How will you two continue this fight going forward?
So there's 20-something of us at least engaged in this fight in the bankruptcy court we'll continue to press the state's claims against both Purdue Pharma and the Sacklers. We realize, of course, that what the Department of Justice has done hampers our ongoing efforts and, you know, potentially money that we could have recovered for the people of our states, Connecticut, New York, and then our sister states in Massachusetts and Pennsylvania and beyond. That's going to be reduced potentially by what the federal government takes out of the estate of Purdue Pharma. But that doesn't mean we're going to stop. And we're going to fight tooth and nail and make the case, as we have every bit of the way, that the states are in the best position to provide help for treatment and prevention and to provide justice for the victims and their families.
What happens now specifically to the thousands of civil lawsuits brought against Purdue Pharma by states, counties, and municipalities? We've sort of talked, we've sort of referenced those things, but specifically, what does happen now?
So each state is different, and each set of municipalities and their claims are different. Suffice it to say, sort of writ large, they're represented by their lawyers in the bankruptcy, and they're pressing their claims as well. And we're all trying to reach a resolution where we get the most effective help to the people that need it. And my view is that states are in the strongest position to do that.
Okay, so final question on this point. So you plan on continuing to pursue this. What is your dream outcome here?
Well, my dream outcome is that we stop people from dying. And the people that I have seen in my office, the victims of this crisis and their families, that they find peace and that they can move on with their lives and rebuild their lives. Well, that's my dream, and that we abate this crisis completely.
Well, my more specific question then is you know, when we open up the newspaper 6 months from now and we say a judge has ruled or a judge has done this, what do you want to see in that news story as to what is done here for the state of Connecticut?
So let me say this. This isn't going to be over in 6 months or a year or 2 years. The state of Connecticut is taking on the addiction industry. And to the extent that big pharmaceutical companies or distributors or healthcare providers are responsible for this crisis, we're going to hold them accountable. It's important to know, John, that Purdue Pharma is an important piece, but it's only one piece of the addiction industry. And frankly, by size, there are other wrongdoers, other companies in the opioid space that are even more responsible and in my view, need to pay even more money and damages to the states and to victims and their families. So what I hope you'll see when you open the newspaper 6 months from now, a year from now, is even more action, even either more trials or more settlements in which we are holding even more wrongdoers accountable.
Quickly before we go, we also have to deal with another settlement that you were a part of, much less money this time, in regards to Apple. The gargantuan Apple Corporation and their ubiquitous iPhones. Your office today announced that there's been a $113 million settlement with Apple over what we can call economic progression through designed obsolescence. The idea that Apple wanted to sell more phones by making the phones that they've already sold not work so well.
Yeah, I got another name for it. Make us buy more stuff, right?
Exactly.
And doing it in a dishonest and deceitful way. So this is a really big deal for consumers, even though the number amount isn't as big as some other big settlements in other cases. It's $113 million, $1.8 million to Connecticut. But basically, Apple was throttling the speed on its phones. It had a battery problem with its iPhones, and instead of telling everybody that it had a battery problem and maybe doing some recalls or something to fix that problem, they covered it up, they re-engineered their software, and they slowed down the phones to deal with that battery problem. And what ended up happening is people started thinking, oh shoot, there's something wrong with my phone, it's out of warranty, or I have an older phone and I guess I need to buy a new one, or my software is not up to date. And it compelled many of us, probably me, probably you, to go out and buy a new phone. And these days you can't get a new phone usually for $100 or $50 or for some reasonable amount. You got to go out and pay more than $1,000 for a smartphone. And by the way, smartphones are not luxuries. They're essential. They're essential for all of us to run our lives, run a small business, be attorney general, be a journalist. If you need your email, your text, if you have kids, distance learning at home, if you have older folks in your family, like my parents and my 96-year-old grandmother that you need to stay in touch with constantly by video and text and phone and email, your iPhone or your mobile phone, smartphone is essential to life.
If I were in church right now, I'd say, preach, Reverend. Say it loud. You're absolutely right.
Well, one more thing I'll say is many people across Connecticut are getting notices on their phone that there's now an app that the state is sponsoring so you can know whether you've been in contact with somebody who has been infected with COVID. Right? I mean, how important is that right now?
Exactly.
And so for Apple to slow down its phones and abuse us in that way is wrong. This settlement not just includes the money, but also what we call injunctive relief, where we force them and they agree not to do this again and to take steps to make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Were you not pleased with this money? I mean, $113 million. I mean, that's change between their cushions, isn't it?
You know, it's always a negotiation, and the dollar amount is relative to the specific claim. Of course, Apple, is probably one of the five most valuable companies in the world. How many trillions of dollars in market cap do they have? But I think this is an appropriate amount for this specific violation.
Does that money?
There's also a separate claims process, by the way, for individuals who may have been impacted by Apple's specific misconduct. And so this is different from that. There's a website, smartphoneperformancesettlement.com. And so when we engage in these settlements, John, there's often a private claims process for customers, and then there are the states who sue on behalf of states and seek what are best described as fines and penalties. So, like any fine and penalty you pay to the state of Connecticut, most fines and penalties, those go to the general fund.
Well, Gotham City had Batman. Connecticut has Attorney General William Tong. Thanks for looking out for
us. Thank you so much.
You
got
it.
Thank you.
And I don't think you're bouncing around the streets at night in a cape and cowl, but we don't need you.
Well,
we need you doing what you're doing.
I don't have as cool a car as Batman, but,
Can you imagine the insurance on that thing? Come on. Okay.